Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, a look at a very interesting week in the Capitol. But first, wish I was there. The governor says when his emails do become public, they're boring. I asked Mike Koval and Rick Ramish, who have 7 decades of law enforcement experience, about legalizing marijuana, Senator Dale Cuenca, on a bill, his bill, that would penalize spoofing, using someone else's phone number when you make a call, and a witness at a committee hearing uses a hot dog to make a point about the $23 trillion federal deficit that he says is crushing our future's children. Wish I was there.
I can tell you flat out that when indeed people get my emails, they'll find them so boring.
I do not know what the House will do, but if we do get articles of impeachment sent over to the Senate, I will take that oath and follow that oath.
The definition of equity is the quality of being fair and impartial. This bill will offer a comprehensive framework for combating root causes that have been a lead to why we are faced with systemic racism and the racism that exists in the history of the state of Wisconsin.
Medical marijuana, should it be legalized?
Not just medical, but recreational also. It should be legalized. Now, it should be regulated correctly, but it should be legalized.
I'd like us to see a sort of fast-track FDA clinical trials, seeing medical come first, and then over time, decriminalizing and perhaps looking at it as a regulatory substance.
I would say arguably one of the biggest components of this bill is to try to allow birth parents to terminate their parental rights voluntarily outside of court. And so I want to emphasize that the department supports those efforts. But as the bill's written, that's where we have some opposition.
What this bill is doing is it's increasing the penalty for a thing called spoofing. Spoofing is where I'm going to take Dave Craig's number and I'm going to call someone and it shows that I'm Dave Craig. So we're making that illegal, increasing the fine from $100 to $10,000.
Unfortunately, elder abuse has become a common theme and problem throughout the state of Wisconsin. Since the year 2001, elder abuse cases have increased by 160%.
I got this hot dog at a gas station for a dollar. A $23 trillion debt is 310,800 hot dogs for every single kid under 18 in America. That's 31,000 pounds of hot dogs each, including vegetarians. Hot dogs aside, if we do nothing, we will crush our kids under the weight of this debt.
I'm going to put some context into our first subject. The 2016 election for president, 2.9 million votes cast in Wisconsin. President Trump won by, I looked it up with the Elections Commission, 22,748. By way of background, JR, I want to talk about this lawsuit that was filed last week by Will, Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, excuse me. And it follows in October, the Elections Commission found 234,000, which is a lot, given that Trump won by 22,748, whose addresses may have changed. The board had decided that it would not declare these voters ineligible for 12 to 24 months. Will filed a complaint. The complaint was dismissed. They sued. Now, the court ruling could affect next year's elections, spring primary, spring mm-hmm. election, August primary, and November presidential election. That's my way of setting up how important this is. Your turn.
So Will wants the cutoff to be 30 days, I believe it is.
Yes.
Not as April 2021, yeah. That the commission says that you would be pulled off the rolls. Now, in Wisconsin, we have same-day vote registration, right? So
yes.
If you show up at the polls and you're not on the list, you can re-register. But you have to have prepared with you, you know, form of ID, proof of residence, all these
things.
All the
IDs that we've been fighting over for the last 3 years, excuse me.
So if you're not prepared for that, then it makes you go home, then come back. Well, then are you going to make the effort? The complaint from liberals is that this is a pattern that we've seen nationally
yeah.
of Republicans and conservatives saying, okay, we're going to go in and try to clean up the rolls and make sure we comply with the law on point A, B, and C. To Republicans, the commission is exceeding its authority. They have interpretation. The statute says it's got to be this. The commission's saying this. They want a judge or judges to say, no, this is what the law says. So the courts are going to ultimately decide what this is, but it's another example of an administrative agency, and it's making a decision, and conservatives saying, no, we think this law says this, and you're exceeding what it says.
Okay, but I'm proposing this as our first topic today because it's not so important now, but the political implications next year could be very important in a state Trump won by 22,748 votes.
Look, voter ID is still a divisive issue when you talk about it in the Capitol. There are Republicans who think that this is a safeguard that's needed. There are Democrats who think that it played a role in what happened in 2016. You know, in talking to opponents of voter ID during that whole debate, the point they made to me was, you know, there are ways to make it work, that we can get people to the polls still, right?
Yes.
We can, or get people to get an ID before they go to the polls. We can make it work. It's one more step for our voters who may lack the necessary IDs or the necessary documentation to get to the polls. It makes the task that much harder. So that's the kind of the barrier. Oh, and oh, by the way, Democrats complain that DMVs aren't open long enough. Mm-hmm. They're not convenient to get to. If you're in rural Wisconsin, you have limited days sometimes to get to one. You have to travel so many miles. So it's another hurdle. But again, for Republicans, this is a common sense safeguard.
Another major case that our new state Supreme Court could resolve before the November 2020 presidential elections. Okay, topic two. I've covered seven governors, JR. I've never heard a governor say what Governor Evers said this week. Could we play that tape, please?
I don't think they're bastards, obviously. But, you know, you look back to World War II, World War I. Don't let the bastard keep you down is a term of art. It's not a term of necessarily insult. And I can remember Barry Goldwater used it in '64 when he ran for president, and I know John Boehner had it on his desk. So it's not something I just pulled out of thin air. It's a saying. It's a thing. So I don't think they're bastards, but I think they did make a huge mistake in not doing what they did to the Brad Pitt.
Some context. The governor also said, look, I'm normally a low-key guy, but the rejection, the firing of my hand-picked Secretary of Ag took me to a new level of anger that he did say, stupid, amoral, political assassination, and when he spoke to some dadcap people, don't let the bastards keep you down. And that's why he was forced to clarify that at a press conference. Mm-hmm. Now, this, of course, you and I saw statements from Senate Majority Leader Steinicke and the Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. I'm sorry, Assembly Majority Leader Steinicke and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. These attacks are shockingly disrespectful towards Senate Republicans. It's no wonder Evers hasn't been able to accomplish anything in divided government. Are we making much ado about nothing? I mean, you and I know politicians have gotten angry, but here you have a governor that is, these remarks have now become public.
Mm-hmm. Something he said in a semi-private arena, right, talking to DATCAP employees. I know governors have used colorful language before.
Oh, absolutely.
Closed doors. Why this is kind
We're
of
kind become, of saying this is the way they talk, but not, it doesn't become public.
Why this gets so much attention in part is, Tony Evers won in part because he cultivated an image of a nice guy.
Yeah.
He said he was going to bring the Capitol together, be above the fray. But things changed the day after he was elected because that's when the push began for the lame duck session.
Lame duck.
All right. Yes, we've never heard a governor say this in public, but we've also never seen what's transpired in the last 11 months in the Capitol. In talking to people, like, let's kind of pull back big picture. There are two events that I've seen in the Capitol in my nearly 20 years that really changed the building significantly. One does not deserve to be in the breath of anything else. That's Act 10.
Yes.
That is an event all on its own. You can't compare it to anything else that's ever happened.
That's fair.
But in the post-Act 10 world, we saw Governor Walker have the Beer and Brat Summit at the residence. We saw an effort to have at least a veneer of civility, right? The lame duck session in December stripped all of that away.
Yep.
And it took the place to a different level. Again, it can't be compared to Act 10, but it took it to a new level of hostility.
Right.
Governor Evers had a euchre night at the residence. One Republican showed up. And with Evers, that image he cultivated, you know, pre-election, it kind of becomes a question, okay, well, they keep blaming each other. It's your fault this began. No, it's your fault. You did this. You did that. So Evers is unhappy with the lame duck session. Republicans are angry that Evers took the opportunity during a court ruling from a Dane County judge to rescind the appointments of numerous Walker appointees,
yes,
including a PSC appointee, former DOA Secretary El Novak. There are all kinds of like things back and forth. Governor Evers' administration, his office calling Jupiter sexist. You know, I mean, you go on down the line of what's happened. And now we're at this point where Evers is angry and he's letting these words out, and it strips away the image of the nice guy.
Okay, and I'm reminded that Senator Fitzgerald a couple weeks ago said it's our job to play goalie and stop bad ideas, and Speaker Voss agreed with that. Did we hit a new low point this week?
Oh, we hit a new low like every week, it seems like, in the Capitol.
Okay.
So, look, and let's be honest. I talked to plenty of people this week who have a hard time swallowing the idea of GOP leaders posing for holy pictures about civility. With the stuff that we've seen in the Capitol, what's going on, there are no innocent babes in these woods of the state Capitol.
Thank you for saying that.
But with Evers, here's the question he faces, okay? We've looked at the Marquette poll numbers, right?
Yeah.
He's got great numbers, and people have told me they think it's in part because of the image of the guy who's above the fray, who's going to be nonpartisan. They're worn out by 8 years of Walker and the constant partisan grind. They're looking for something different. Evers has a choice, people tell me. Does he want to go be that guy, the above-the-fray guy? Does he want to work with Republicans and try and get stuff done? That could mean being the bigger person. We don't see the bigger person in politics anymore. It's all about the winning, not even just the news cycle, but the hour anymore. And mm-hmm. It's a constant social media back and forth. Does he want to be above the fray? Or does he want to spend the next 3 years campaigning against Republicans, saying this is a do-nothing legislature, they're not getting anything done you care about, and then spend the whole time doing that? Well, then what do you get accomplished? It's an interesting choice for him. There's this image of him being this kind of pushover, you know, kind of like quiet guy. So is he trying to look tough, like he's, you know, I'm going to fight back, which excites Democrats. I mean, some of the base, like, yeah, this guy's fighting for us.
Yeah.
But by doing that, you inflame the Republican base, and you're not getting anything in the middle. So I don't know if he's got a good choice right now. There are people who told me this week, look, this is much ado about nothing. Republicans want to jump onto anything they can to distract from not doing the gun bills, to not getting much done this session, to like denying medical marijuana, expanding Medicaid, everything else. But the governor is the one with the soapbox, and so he's going to get the most attention and the most pushback on stuff like
this.
Well,
okay, and it's important to note that this new coarseness in our political back and forth and discourse follows what we've heard in Washington over the last 3 years.
It's just, I mean, everything you see anymore is about twisting the knife. It's just really is, and I don't see anybody in the Capitol, when I've asked people about this, who's going to step back and say, you know what, I'm going to step away from this fray. I'm going to let you hit me 3 or 4 times and not respond. I'm going to try me. It doesn't happen anymore in politics. And I'm not saying at any level it doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, new subject. Here's an example of the powers of being governor. When Governor Evers says that state government should pay a $15 minimum wage, that is a goal of progressives nationally. So he submits a pay plan. Well, first of all, there's a 2% pay raise annually in the state budget that the GOP passed, and he signed into law. So he submits a plan to implement it, and he includes a $15 minimum wage. And I read it, and it would start $15 for permanent state and UW employees by January 2021. However, this plan must go back to the legislature's Committee on Employment Relations to be okayed. Do you think the Republicans are going to go along with a $15 minimum wage?
People have a hard time seeing it, but Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald didn't respond to my calls seeking comment about this.
Yeah.
Evers brought the plan late last Friday. I asked for comment over the weekend, again on Monday, didn't get anything from them, so I'm not sure what their response is at this point. But generally speaking, they are opposed. I mean, remember, he put a $15 minimum wage in the budget, I believe, I remember correctly.
He did. He wanted to phase it in. He wanted a study commission to eventually say, let's move it up in annual boosts, and then let's get to 15.
So that's a different topic. This is the pay plan versus, like, for that. But they pulled that out. So, the inclination most people I talk to is this is not something that's going to fly, but they haven't been talking to us about it.
Okay, and one other nuance. This was greeted by UW Chancellor Blank by saying this going to $15 will help recruit and retain high-quality employees. But I asked the UW-Madison, how many of your employees, and I looked it up, they have about 21,000, how many of them would actually get a pay raise if we had a $15 minimum wage? 422. So not very many. Symbolism?
No, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely some symbolism in that.
Okay. All right. Next topic. Wisconsin was a leader nationally in growing hemp, and this bill that is now on its way to the governor, its sponsors say would make us a leader again. It would establish new procedures, and it would get away with a pilot and procedure. I'm sorry, it had been a pilot by the DADCAP, and it would create a safe harbor for growers whose crop exceed THC thresholds. And it would redefine marijuana to exclude hemp. Here's what intrigues me. Lena Taylor says the city of Milwaukee can be a leader in urban ag, and hemp is a key part of the story. Pat Teston, Senator, Republican from central Wisconsin. The Nakusa paper mill that I toured has been repurposed into a hemp drying and storage facility for this harvest season. This crop has a lot of potential. So, okay, we should go, huzzah, Democrats and Republicans have finally agreed on something. They want to, again, make Wisconsin a capital of hemp growing. Your thoughts on this?
A couple of things. This bill essentially matches Wisconsin law to the 2018 Farm Bill, federal Farm Bill in some ways. Also, there's provision that there's a lot of big words that I can't pronounce, but if you're basically driving with the psychoactive ingredient of marijuana in your system,
yeah,
you can be charged with driving the influence, right?
Right.
Well, if you use CBD oil, these other products, there is a very small part, amount of that chemical. It kind of clarifies when you can be charged for that stuff. That was a little bit of a hang-up with the police. They eventually worked out a compromise. They were good with that. But this is another step in the resurgence of the industry in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Now, don't forget, Governor Evers also wants more positions over at DATCAP to help administer the program,
which we're about to hear about.
Yep. Republicans said no. Don't forget, there's also a push for medical marijuana and legalization of marijuana. Those things aren't going to happen. This is the one thing in the hemp family, I guess you could say, that they can agree on at this point.
Well, okay, but for the 2 years that Wisconsin has grown hemp under the pilot program, it's been wet, and two straight years of wet conditions have means we have not been off to a tremendous success. But let's hear the sponsor of the hemp bill in the assembly, Tony Kurtz, a farmer who admits in this that he does grow hemp, and then Evan Goyke, Democrat from Milwaukee, saying, wait, DADCAP needs more positions. Please.
As many of you know, the state of Wisconsin was a leader in the United States on hemp growing. And we're going to be that leader once again with this bill, and this is a great step forward. I grow hemp on my farm. I do it for grain, so I know the benefits that it's going to have, not just for CBD, but also for the grain market, and also the future potential for the fiber, which is something I think our state, once again, can be a leader in.
This is a growth industry, literally. It's something that's new and taking off, and DATCAP needs positions. They need bodies in the field, literally, to test this crop so that it can actually go to market and farmers can actually make a living growing and selling hemp and hemp products. The co-chair of finance just explained, we didn't actually take a vote. Well, we were scheduled to, and then we didn't. Well, not appropriating and not approving that position is as good for now as saying no. It's a no to the farmers now because that position cannot be filled.
Now it's time for the job board section of the show. Let's talk about three people who got new jobs. Brad Pfaff, who didn't make it as Ag Commissioner, is now the Director of Business and Rural Development for the Wisconsin Department of Administration. Your thoughts on that appointment?
The soft landing we hinted about last week. It was kind of clear that Governor Evers is unhappy about how Brad was treated, why his anger came out. By the way, as a side note, people who know Governor Evers quite well say he's not a saint. Despite his image, he does swear occasionally in private and those kinds of things, but he's unhappy how they treated Brad, and this is a way to kind of make it right, I think, for Brad in some ways in the governor's mind.
Okay, and his new pay is going to be fairly comparable to what he was getting as Ag Secretary. Mm-hmm. Rebecca Clayfish, former Lieutenant Governor for 8 years, then went to Washington for to be the Executive Director of the Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission. A few weeks ago said, I'm coming back to Wisconsin. New job. What is jobs ambassador for Associated Builders and Contractors, JR?
Not quite sure what that all is going to entail. However, she, in the Walker administration, part of her job is around the state and kind of promote economic development. She's going to run for governor in 2022. Barring something unforeseen, she is queued up to run in 2022 for governor, and I don't think it's going to hurt her in any way seeking that position.
So this will put her in a position to go around the state, keep making the contacts, mm-hmm. and no doubt in your mind she's laying the groundwork to run in 20.
No doubt whatsoever.
No doubt. Former Congressman Sean Duffy, he had been on CNN, and you've been talking about how he's getting his comments have been getting some pushback. He's going to become a K Street in Washington lobbyist, now a senior counsel for BGR Group. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, so Clayfish, I mean, like Clayfish, things could always change. I mean, she could always decide I'm not going to run. For Duffy, this may be that he's making a decision now. And why I say that is, in being on CNN, there was a wonder, well, maybe he's going to become more of a conservative media personality, mm-hmm. you know? Becoming a lobbyist is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
So people don't like lobbyists that much. Now, I like lobbyists because they're good sources, but but a lot of the general public don't like lobbyists running for public office. Under House rules, he can't lobby his House colleagues for a year. He can lobby the Trump administration, though, right away, I believe. And when he announced his resignation back in August for September 23rd, I think it was, the two questions that came up were, okay, what's he going to do? Is he going to pay him as well as Congress with as good a health plan? And then what's this all mean for 2022? Because he's mentioned as a statewide candidate mm-hmm. in 2022. So the first question got answered, right? He's making money on CNN, which he can just hop in the car in Wausau, drive on the road to the local TV station, do a quick hit with the network, fly out to D.C. on the weekend, do a panel discussion. I mean, that's not a bad gig. Lobbying, though, now he's going to be in D.C. more often. So critics say, hey, wait a second, I thought this guy had to be at home with his ninth child who's got some health challenges.
Yes.
So what's this all about? But he's definitely doing well, I'm going to guess, compared to being in Congress. So that's checked off. But now the 2022 question is still out there. So what's this mean? It may be, like I said, he's walking away from a future in politics because it's hard sometimes to transition from lobbyist to candidate, especially with what you lobby on or what you're lobbying for. Is he going to lobby for big banks? What's it going to be?
Well, yeah, because he had served on the subcommittee on financial services. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get the title right.
Yeah.
And as senior counsel for BGR Group, I think the press release said he's going to continue to focus on some of these issues. And they've got large financial institutions as clients. So you seem to be saying he could take it, he with this new job, he could be taking himself out of the running for gov in 2022?
Possibly. I mean, things can change, but it's, again, I talked to people this week and their perception, some people's perception was, it is tough at times to make that transition, say, well, I'm lobbying, but now I'm going to run for governor or U.S. Senate, and, you know, it's sometimes a tough platform.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the final assembly action this week. Now, they did approve the creation of, I think, 12 judges mm-hmm. over the next 4 years. But they did some symbolic things. They designated the evergreen tree that will soon be in the middle of the rotunda as a Christmas tree. And that, it was intriguing mm-hmm. because you and I have gone back and forth. Under Walker, that was a Christmas tree. Mr. Doyle, I think, called it a holiday tree.
25 years as a holiday tree before right. Walker, something like that.
Right. But now Mr. Evers says it's a holiday tree and I want science-based decorations on it. Because I started my career as a science teacher. And then Representative Paul Tittle, who we'll hear from in a minute, sponsored a resolution designating Thanksgiving week, November 25 through 29, as National Bible Week, drawing the objection of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which said that's highly inappropriate. What a way to end an assembly session for the last day of the last session day of the year, JR.
Now remember, Evers announced a week ago, but he's calling it the holiday tree.
Yes.
Didn't say, oh, by the way, I'm changing it.
And I want Walker science called. Decorations on it.
But he just basically put that out, noticed that, tweeted out that, hey, this is what he's calling it. This is what Walker called it. People noticed that, started to get some attention. From Friday to Monday, Scott Krug, a Republican from Nakusa, had a resolution to call it a Christmas tree. They pulled it to the floor on Tuesday and voted out, even though the Senate will be back to take it up before Christmas. So. Right. At earliest they would take it up, it'd be early next year. But I asked people, like, well, what's the point of doing this? And one answer I got was, look, this is one of those 80% issues back home that people in the grocery shop you and go, why is that Evers calling it a holiday tree? What is that all about, right? Two, there's a suspicion among some that the entire purpose of the next couple months is going to be for Robin Voss to get Democrats on record on some difficult votes. Note that on that resolution, Steve Doyle from Onalaska and Robin Vining from Wauwatosa, two Democrats who are targets for next fall,
right,
voted for the resolution. That did not go unnoticed by some people that, look, you know, it's not going to be about the majority control next year, right? Barring the bottom dropping out for President Trump in ways that we can't foresee right now, it's just not going to happen. The question next fall in the Assembly is, and the Senate too, can Republicans get to a two-thirds majority, then have the path to override anything that Governor Evers does, right? To do that, you got to pick up three seats in the Assembly. The obvious ones are Robin Vining, who won a seat.
That
it was Walker's old seat. Walker won that district last fall, and Robin Vining did. Steve Doyle in Onalaska. He is a guy who defies gravity. It's a Republican-leaning seat, and he holds it because he's so well-known and so well-liked. But then where do you go? The map is pretty Democratic. I mean, the seats left are pretty Democratic because Republicans drew a great map for themselves. The Democrats called them gerrymandered. But they've also maximized their performance on this for the most part. So where else do you go? Well, you look up north. Nick Milroy up in northern Wisconsin. Beth Myers up in northern Wisconsin. Trump did fairly well in those districts. He won Milroy's by 11 votes. He won Myers by 3 percentage points.
Yeah, the biggest margin, the 7th Congressional District, that Northwoods area that you were just talking about.
Now, Milroy's unopposed last fall. Beth Myers won like 55 or 56% of the vote last fall.
Mm-hmm.
But with Trump on the ballot, is there a chance to pick off one of those two? Because
yeah,
if you can sweep Vining, Doyle up there, you get to 66, if you hold everybody.
Right.
That's a flip side because Donald Trump's damaging the brand in suburban Milwaukee. So, like, I get the impression that you got to watch for some tough votes coming up. I don't mean he's going to win or lose based on a Christmas tree resolution. Okay?
No, but it's all part of a pattern here.
But just watch for that.
I didn't know that Vining and Doyle voted for the, okay, but anyway, we have to move on. We're almost out of time. Rising, stock picks.
So, look, 2 months ago, all we talked about was how crowded the field could be for the 5th Congressional District, right?
Yep.
Long-time Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner is retiring, very Republican seat. Everybody's going to run. Right now, Fitzgerald's the only one left.
What about Mark Newman's son?
He hasn't said yet. So right
but
now,
he's
there is
the only one that we don't know about.
There's
Excuse
one
me.
Republican who's running for one of those Republican seats in the Wisconsin Congressional Delegation.
Senate Majority
Scott
Leader
Fitzgerald.
Scott Fitzgerald.
Chris Capping this week said he's not going to run. He'd been laying the foundation to it. I had sourced somebody who was calling people about trying to build a campaign. He decided after going to Washington, D.C. and meeting with people that his leadership could be better used elsewhere.
But his statement said he's not ruling out a run for governor in 2022.
Capping up. Focusing on the now. Look, Fitzgerald, number one, he had been looking at this for a long time. He was quick out of the gate, quick to embrace Donald Trump, quick to start doing it. He seized the moment. Two, everybody else had a personal reason for not running. Like Paul Farrell, Waukesha County Executive, he thought about it. He wants to run for governor someday. That's a perception.
Governor Walker's son considered it. Out.
He doesn't want it as much as dad does. That was the perception about that one, right?
Yep.
Leah Vukmir thought about it, but she's in the private sector now, making a decent living, and gets to be with her family, not being the fishbowl of a campaign. Kevin Nicholson thought about it. Ran for U.S. Senate in 2018.
Also out.
Wants to run statewide someday. And, oh, by the way, he did very poorly in southeastern Wisconsin, that U.S. Senate primary. So, I mean, everybody had a reason. So Fitz has done a good job. Everybody had a reason. And, oh, by the way, with, like, Capinga, if Fitzgerald loses this primary, he's still a majority leader in the Senate, right? So
yep,
if you're a lobbyist or somebody who's got, you know, things you want to get done in Wisconsin, you still have to deal with them. If Capping loses his primary, okay, he's a rank and file member, so it's not as much of a tough, difficult choice for you.
Okay, that, I understand. Okay, we got a minute and a half. Mixed.
So tax rate, this is an annual thing that the Wisconsin Policy Forum and its predecessor did where they crunch census numbers and say, okay, this is how much of your income is going to state and local taxes. We therefore rank here. We were top 10 for years. We moved out of that originally under Jim Doyle in a Republican legislature, dipped back in the top 10, and when Dems had full control, and then gradually coming back out, we've hit like a plateau. We had about 10.3% of personal income goes to state and local taxes in 2017, it's a two-year lag. That's up slightly, but we're also dropping a list of most taxed states because others are moving around. But right now, we're kind of like in this 10.2, 10.3, 10.4.
Which makes us 19th?
19th right now.
We're number 19th, couldn't
be prouder.
We were
22nd in 2015.
Okay.
And why I bring this up is it's often a measure of like, okay, where are we at in terms of other states? And one thing I look at going forward is, one, yes, there are more tax cuts that came in that will be fully phased in from Walker and Republicans when they controlled the last year of 2018. Mm-hmm. Governor Evers signed a new tax cut in 2019, but there are also school referendums that impact like how much the tax burden there is. Income growth impacts it. There are all kinds of factors, but it's just a measure of where we're at.
You're trying to out-wonk me. That's pretty impressive. Okay, you got 50 seconds on falling.
Look, two things happened this week. Governor Evers is picking a fight with the media about open records. This Milwaukee TV station, Fox 6, asked for originally 4 weeks of emails between him and Maggie Gow, chief of staff. Then went down to one single day, and they said no because it didn't mention a topic. Evers says, well, my email is pretty boring anyway. I said maybe one a day, so that's not should be a problem. Staff says, no, you're not getting it anyway. It kind of boggles people's minds, like, why pick that fight?
Well, he campaigned on open and transparency.
So, now, right. Okay. There are reasons maybe they don't want to allow open and fishing expeditions, but still odd. And then Lafayette County had this resolution about basically prosecuting journalists to report, take a press release about
the
these water
about
studies.
Water quality.
And don't print the entire thing, but, like, selectively report what they want to. Yeah. Didn't really go anywhere, but there's a lot of attention about that going to southwestern Wisconsin and what that means.
Okay. Just real quickly on next week, the three Supreme Court candidates in April, will be having their first forum, first meeting of the governor's task force on reducing prescription drug prices. Wisconsin and I will be at both. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for November 15th.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.